Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of What's Next. I am your host, Tiffany Bova, and I have the privilege of welcoming Marga Hoke to the show today. She is a rare combination, a true visionary on sustainable business, capital, and technology, and a successful business leader. As a three-time CEO, board member, chair, and founder of Business for Good, she applies her vision on how businesses can be a true force for good in practice. She's also a best-selling and multi-award-winning author of Trillion Dollar Shift and now her latest book, Tech for Good. She continues to champion a phrase she coined, business for good is good business. Welcome to the show, Marga.
Thank you. Hi, Tiffany. Nice to be here.
Yes, I'm thrilled to have you because we have so much to talk about. But before we get started, I have to do the famous or infamous, depending on what you think, of bullish and bearish. Bullish, you're for it. Bearish, you're against it. Are you ready?
As much as I'll ever be. So,
all right. All right. So, bullish, you're for it. Bearish, you're against it. Solar powered camper vans. Bullish or bearish?
Bullish.
Yes. And some students in the Netherlands just sort of launched the very first solar powered camper van. So I thought I'd give that to you.
That was an easy one.
That was easy. All right. The next one, bullish or bearish? Robot teachers.
Bullish.
Oh, great. All right. And the next
one. Ask me later why or not.
No, I will ask you why. I will ask you why. All right. So hold that thought though. All right. Next, commercial space travel.
Oh, that depends on how it's being done. So that's both. I'm sorry.
Fair. No, fair. All right. So let's go to robot teachers and why you were so bullish. I'm excited that you were so bullish on it. Tell me.
Yeah, because, well, of course, I've looked into the topic of robotics extensively in multiple functions. And given the fact that there's a lot of special teaching that we need to enhance the education for either older people or kids with specific needs, and think about, for instance, kids that suffer from some mental disorders or like autism or any other thing. It's been proven, and I found this question actually interesting, that's why I know, that it's more effective to have a super, super, super patient robot, because a robot doesn't mind if he has to do something 20, 30, 40 times in a one-to-one situation, than having somebody in a classroom with everything being done really quickly with 40 kids in the classroom. Now, of course, it's not a, how do you call it, bullish in all situations. But I thought, let me answer by bullish, because I think we need to be more broad-minded about how we look at these things, because the average person will immediately say bearish. But there's much more to it.
I agree. And I also think it gives access potentially to education that might otherwise not be available.
That's the thing with digital education, you know, there's platforms, and I write a lot about that in my book, that, you know, solve situations where there's wars, kids can't go to school, there's no money to take them to school, or the classes are filled with 80 kids, and all those situations. And I can mention a case from my book, it's called Nafham, which actually means I understand in Arabic, which has been founded in Egypt to solve the problem of all the three above that I mentioned. Huh? No money, too many kids, no access because of instabilities. And it started out as something in parallel to the teachers, to actually help the teachers, huh? To make it available digitally alongside, so to say, in all kinds of different shapes and forms of MOOCs. And at the beginning, the teachers all did this voluntarily. So it wasn't a business case. It was a foundational thing, if you will. And then it became so popular, and now it's grown tremendously. Investors are there, and it's growing into a full-blown business form.
Yeah, and I think this is really the foundation for your book, right, on how businesses can successfully apply like these advanced technologies, robot AI being one of them, right, not the only, in a purpose-driven manner, right, trying to solve these big problems. And then it unlocks new markets and business opportunities, which is what you just ended with, right? There's a whole new category here.
I couldn't have said it better, Tiffany.
Oh, well, you did say it. I just borrowed it from your book. But so, you know, as stated by you, but you use the framework from the United Nations SDGs or Sustainability Development Goals. And I will tell you that not everyone is familiar with SDGs, right? Sometimes, you know, I wear the pin often when I'm on stage. I do. And because I've gotten the opportunity, I was blessed to speak at the UN twice on girls in tech and STEM. And so, I got the pins when I was there. And, you know, when I wear them, sometimes people don't know what they are. And so maybe we can just ground the conversation there.
Yeah. So in 2015, we needed actually a new set of goals. Before that, we had the so-called millennial goals. And they were very much developed by the public world, so NGOs and governments, and it very much focused on poverty. That was the main topic before 2015. Some years leading up to 2015, a wider group was set up. And actually, this is interesting, business hugely contributed this time. But at this time, of course, we realized we have a bunch of challenges that span from ecological challenges to social ones and to governance ones, hence ESG, and that they're actually all interrelated, so that we needed a wider set of goals. So then it was studied, okay, if we want to have a sustainable, lasting world with equal opportunities for everyone, what would that look like? And so after studies, we came up with 16 content goals, and the last one being partnerships for the goals that span from poverty to inequality to climate change to life on land and underwater, you know, biodiversity. And these were mentioned as the 17 topics. Then the next thing is that they were given specific objectives, because, you know, you can say something is important, but it's worth only something if you make a clear and smart objective. So there were goals set for 2030. So we had 15 years time to get it done. And those were, for instance, specific targets on decreasing child mortality, decreasing hunger, and of course, decreasing temperature rise as a consequence of climate change, and so on and so forth. The interesting thing is that it is 17 goals, underlying targets and underlying indicators. So it's a super smart system. And that's also a compliment to the business world that stepped in this time to together make a set of goals that would be workable in practice also, and maybe even most importantly, for business. So that's the work that has been done. It was ready in 2015. For those listeners that don't know about it, you can read my former book, which is actually specifically around those sustainable development goals, called The $1 trillion Shift, meaning that engaging with these sustainable development goals equally unlocks markets and creates business opportunity, hence the $1 trillion shift. And you can also, you know, download very simple apps. I have them on my phone. If I forget something, want to look something up, you can easily see it. Many companies, especially the front-running companies, started to work with these goals for two reasons. On the one hand, you want to, let's say, close the back door. You want to mitigate your negative impact. You want to do well, you don't want to do bad. So you want to take away your negative impact. I always call that to close the back door. All the rules and regulations, and you're in the States, we're in Europe here, so, you know, we're suffering a lot more from European legislations and laws and obligations putting upon, which are actually all focused on mitigating negative impact by making sure that everybody's not doing bad stuff. But then, on the other hand, more importantly, you have the front door. And that's, how can I create actually value? How can I be, as business, a part of the solution and actually be a help to solve these SDGs? And that's where the innovative, interesting business opportunities lie. Now, currently, we're, of course, everybody can do the math, over the halfway point of the SDGs. Are we halfway point progress? No, we're not. Now, goals always have to be ambitions. It's not said that it's super important that we achieve everything precisely, but I wrote the book Tech for Good. One reason for it was because I noticed that if we want to achieve them, the only way we can actually do it is by using technology for what it can bring to accelerate progress on these sustainable development goals.
Well, you've said it a couple times, and I want to highlight this because it's also something out of your book, that businesses got involved. And there was, right, there was a reason. So this is a stat, again, from your book. So you can say, I couldn't have said it better myself. An astounding 69 of the world's 100 largest economies by revenue are companies, not countries.
Yeah, there you go. If people ask me why, and I show them, for instance, maps of the world and the progress on the SDGs around the world, and sometimes they ask me, what's it to us? You know, aren't those governments and NGOs going to solve that? And of course, you can do all kinds of idealistic talks, but I like to give the numbers. So if 69 of the 100 largest economies by revenue is business, you know, there's a lot of power to business and hence a lot of responsibility and need.
What I find fascinating is, you know, sort of pre-pandemic, you know, a lot of the companies that you highlighted in the book are part of the business roundtable here, you know, and thinking about how can we really lean into ESGs and put metrics in place that we talk about during our earnings calls. You know, Paul Pullman at Unilever was probably one of the first to go out on a limb and say, I'm only going to talk about the ESG side of what we've been able to accomplish. You know, let's go all the way to that. To, you know, now seeing a little bit of, you are way closer than I am, so if I'm incorrect on this, please correct me. But a little bit of backlash on ESGs, right? That it's become kind of this four-letter word of it's created all this disruption and lumpiness in markets and earnings are down and this is happening and that is happening because they've gotten too focused on doing well, right? Or for good, which I don't agree with, by the way. But
yeah, if you don't do both, it won't work. You know, but if it does, so I always say purpose-led, performance-driven. So that means you take the purpose first, but you lead your company in a performance-driven way. And you have to show to shareholders, you have to educate them in their language to say, okay, listen, I'm going into these new markets, but see, the growth numbers are even better. It's outperforming. And you can, because in many cases, that is the case. And successors of Paul Pullman at Unilever now have done the numbers. And 70%, I just mentioned Unilever because you just did, 70% of Unilever's portfolio of products is fueled by sustainable businesses. And they grow 69% faster than non-sustainable brands. Do the maths. That's important. Give the numbers. Shareholders, investors speak numbers. So give the numbers. And what happened before in the former wave, if you will, of CEOs felt a little bit like they were reluctant to talk about the results and thought that was inappropriate because you were supposed to talk about what you do for the world, but you have to combine it. And actually, they're positively synergized. And before you had activist shareholders that sent people home, and we all know the examples, because they did sustainability but didn't connect it to the results. By now, we see the reverse.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that some of it, I wonder if it's about this fear of the not understanding, right, that it's just capitalistically driven, where it's about that revenue, profitability, you know, stock price, et cetera, where, you know, you're not thinking about the broader stakeholders. And in that broader stakeholder community is people, planet, communities, you know what I mean? It isn't just the ones that are able to invest in the stock market, because we know that is also a very small slice of people.
Yeah. That's not representing the real economy either. Huh?
Correct. Yeah. Well, you know, let's pivot a little bit into the tech for good, because there isn't a conversation that I have daily where somebody doesn't bring up, You know, they will either blame technology for a reduction of headcount. They will say that, you know, their staff or employees are not embracing the technology for whatever reason, instead of, you know, kind of the fear from it, instead of looking at as a way to reimagine how they do things at work using technology. I always say it's human and tech to me, not human alone, not tech alone. I like the blend of the two, because I just don't think it's possible in work unless it's just absolutely manual labor. But even that, in some ways is fueled by tech, either in the business or the processes or et cetera. So what do you think is needed for leaders and or individuals who might be listening to this and saying, yeah, I'm really holding back on AI, or I'm holding back on GPT, or I don't want to deploy this kind of technology because I don't know what it will do to my business and my people. Or it's the reverse. I'm all in and I'm investing because I want to get rid of people to reduce costs, right? What's the
wrong reason?
It's the same coin, two sides.
Well, of course, there's multiple things that come into play here. First, that is a very essential leadership thing. I think in principle, as a leader, everything that becomes to your disposal is going to be available. You should always consider and have an open mind. How can this improve my business for all its stakeholders? I think it's very important nowadays, with so many, you know, new things coming about in such a rapid pace, you need to be open-minded and having foundation of positivism, how you look at things. That's one. Second, you know, technology is going to be there anyway. So you can be in a denial, or that doesn't help and it's going to happen anyway. You can be in a fearful position, that's not going to help anymore. It might make you, you know, aware of risks, but no more than that. Or you can be saying, okay, I'm going to focus on mitigating the risk, but more important, the majority of my energy will go to how can these technologies actually contribute? And that completed in a purpose-driven way, I mean. And I think there's no reason not to do it, because my book describes clearly that if you do that, it's relevant for every business in every single business sector. So this is not a tech sector thing, that you can strengthen your competitive position, unlock new markets, and provide better products and better service to your clients and to new clients. In other words, it improves your business case. So there's no reason not to do it. Of course, many people are super insecure, which is totally understandable. To be honest, before I wrote this book, I was insecure about technology as well, because, you know, the whole dialogue is about so many technologies and we're all supposed to understand. And I'm in several boards, of course, and in those boards, I often notice that people are afraid to even say, can somebody explain me what the tech actually does? Nobody dares to say that. So, you know, get educated and be aware that this is something everybody has. Get educated in your board, in your team, get the knowledge in so that you don't have to be afraid anymore.
Well, you tap into, in the book, you have 8 groups of advanced technologies, and I want to list them off because I found it interesting that some may seem familiar, others may not. So I'm going to go through them. It was artificial intelligence and data, 3D printing, robotics, advanced materials, extended realities, autonomous vehicles and drones, blockchain, and space technologies. So
thank you.
Thank you. So there's so much in each of those, right? I mean, there's so much coming at people, and there's a stat I often use where the amount of sort of transformational projects driven by digital, right? So let's just kind of call that technology. For an average employee, used to be like in a given year, let's call it like 8 or 9 projects, right? We're coming at them. That number has almost doubled in a given year. So there's a lot coming at people. So to your point, I'm barely understanding the last thing that got thrown at me, you know, and maybe I did ask the question, or maybe it took me 3 or 4 months to do learning on my own because maybe my company wasn't helping me or whatever the case might be. And now something else is showing up. And so I never get proficient on one and something else, or I never really get deep enough in the use cases in my day-to-day job to feel like it is giving me that good, quote unquote, right? That we're trying to achieve the tech for good. It's just, it's so much coming at me that I'm burning out. I'm overloaded. I haven't been able to absorb it. And I feel like I need to get off the roller coaster, right? At some point, because...
Yeah. I always like to give the example of, you know, former industrial revolutions were in that sense very relatively simple. Huh? There were one or two inventions, they have a big effect, you know, with steam, then later oil and gas, then digitalization. But it was singular inventions that did change the world, but you didn't have to worry about the multiplicity of it. It was just a couple of things. Now, with this fourth industrial revolution, we have a huge toolkit with lots of stuff in there. And that stuff has two categories: digital technologies and that's the big difference, physical technologies like 3D printing, advanced materials are physical things. Two groups. You have this toolkit, and it's hugely useful if you know what tool to take out. And guess what? Around every month, new tools appear in that toolbox. This is as fast as it goes. So it's only natural to acknowledge we can't know it all. At a certain moment in time, there are going to be different things and different opportunities. It's better to be aware of that so that if you are thinking, let's say if you have a construction company, you want to see how you can get engaged with new technologies and integrate them in your building process and in your products, to know, okay, these are these categories. Some I can stripe off because they're not relevant, and some I have to now have a look what's happening now and what could be useful and what companies are doing things in that part that I can use. It's constantly changing. Some technologies are experimental, then go through next phase, then become, you know, proven technologies, new ones will appear. I mean, I think we have the third generation of 3D printing already, to give you an example. So change is the new routine, so to say, in that sense.
Absolutely. And do you think that we are, because the other industrial, the first prior three industrial revolutions lasted quite a bit of time. Do you think we're at the cusp of coming to the fifth? Do you think the fifth, we'll see the fifth in our lifetime?
I don't know. It's where we draw the line at a certain point, huh? And because this revolution is about this toolkit, so it's not dependent on a certain specific technology, that will mean that it will last longer, of course, because it accepts the broader definition of all these new advanced technologies coming about. So in that sense, I think it will last a while, but its face will be different, you know, within every couple of years. And sometimes we think something will go very quickly and then everybody says this is going to be quickly and it doesn't. And the other way around, it's also very unpredictable what time is needed for technologies to mature this time.
Well, you know, at this, I could keep going and going because I'm fascinated. I don't pay, obviously, as close of attention to all this as you do. And whenever I can talk to somebody who knows it better than I do, and I'm like, I want to know the answers. But we're almost out of time. And so, you know, first and foremost, if you're listening to this and you want to learn more, please pick up a copy of Marga's latest book, Tech for Good, or the other one, Trillion Dollar Shift, about the ESGs. But how can people lean into this, stay close to your work, start to feel more comfortable with tech, and really view it as something for good?
Well, they can be connected via my newsletter on LinkedIn. I have a monthly article coming out, so that would be smart. They can follow me on the socials, on Instagram, and they can always dig in into my website. I have a lot of articles under press and under blogs that are really informative, and I post regularly new things. And definitely read the new book. I mean, I'm proud to say the subtitle is Imagine Tech for Good, Solving the World's Greatest Challenges. And the book is meant to let you imagine, to inspire you to imagine. So there's a lot of case studies in there, but also a lot of examples. And it's every chapter starts with a spread that describes, literally imagine. And for instance, with 3D printing, it explains how nowadays we are actually able to recuperate our dying coral reefs with 3D printing, because we can do it that well that the eco-life doesn't recognize it to be artificial. So, and I think, you know, people in this time need hope and some positivism. And that's what the book brings. It's not naive, it's very realistic, but it does make you, yeah, be courageous and want to progress, I think.
I love that. What a great way to end our conversation, Marga. Thank you so much for spending time with us on this episode of What's Next, all the way from the Netherlands. And thank you, everybody, for listening in. Don't forget to leave a review, subscribe, share with your friends. And I will look forward to having you join us again next time. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Bye-bye.